Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I like Mid-South Wrestling, Shawn Michaels matches, and Paul Heyman interviews. And I think that Vince Russo, when he's bearded, looks an awful lot like Saddam Hussein.
I'm Carl Jones. I like long-term booking, characters based in reality, and I don't like the This Is Awesome chant.
Hi, I'm G. John Chase, and I believe that Macho Man Randy Savage is the greatest human being to ever live. Every time the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase laughs, I get a strange feeling in my trousers, and to this day I still believe that my dad is the twin of Arn Anderson.
And I'm Luke Edwards, and I enjoy long strolls on the beach, candlelit dinners, and, let's be honest, Booker T and Goldust was the best tag team in wrestling history.
This is the panel for the first Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about who should have been a top guy next. Hello everyone and welcome to the first Squared Circle Gazette radio show. I am Liam O'Rourke from SquaredCircleGazette.com, along here with G. John Chase.
How you doing?
And joining us on this very first episode, our guest panel is Carl Jones.
How you doing everyone?
And Luke Edwards.
Hello there.
Alright, now before we get going with today's show, I want to take a quick second, with this being the first episode of SCG Radio, I want to take a quick second to talk about what this podcast is going to be. Not just this episode, but all the episodes that we're going to be bringing to you in the coming weeks and months. We've got so many different ideas. We're so excited for this project. We're going to have a rotating cast of characters on the show. Myself and G. John Chase are going to be the regular co-hosts, but people whose opinions I value and trust, I'm going to be bringing them onto the show to talk about all things professional wrestling, whether it's the past, the present, the future, a more serious topic, a more lighthearted one, whatever it's going to be. We're basically going to have a random topic, and I'm going to be asking for your feedback a lot. Your opinions, we're going to read them on the show, we're going to discuss what you think, we're going to kick things around, and it's going to be a lot of fun. More importantly than anything else, it's going to be a lot of fun. So much to discuss. We're going to get started right now. G. John Chase, I believe you're going to kick us off with the first topic at hand.
Yeah, certainly. We've got a very special topic for the first podcast, in which we're going to be talking about who could have been a top star in professional wrestling. Someone who didn't get the opportunity or never got the chance to be the champion or never got the chance to be the big money player. Who is it that you believed had the skills, the ability, the talent to be the very top guy in any company?
Yeah, at any time. And we're going to be taking a lot of different things into account here. There's going to be a lot of debate. We're going to be talking a lot about, you know, the circumstances of the time, why they didn't make it, their abilities, everything like that. Like we said, we're going to kick it off, first of all, with my own personal choice for this. And this is one we've kind of discussed what we're going to say beforehand in terms of the individuals. But the person I'm going to throw out there to the panel is Brian Pillman. No surprise to anybody that knows me for any kind of length of time that I'm the biggest Brian Pillman fan in the world. And I really think when you look at all the attributes it takes to be a top guy, Brian Pillman, especially at the end of 1995, beginning of 1996, when he really found himself as the loose cannon, that was the guy at that time that I think if he was able to kind of just harness that into a different place, a different time, I think that Pillman could have made it. Obviously, in terms of, you know, a fantastic wrestler, you know, in the early 90s and stuff with, you know, the Flying Brian, the matches with Jushin Liger, the stuff he did with Steve Austin's, the Hollywood Blondes. The track record is there in terms of pure talent. I think in terms of charisma and ability, he had it as well. I think it took him a little bit of a while to find himself, and obviously he didn't really have all that many chances in WCW as well. But with that said, I mean, I just think that Pillman was a guy who had so many attributes that came together at a perfect time, and just when he was about to get it, I think, it kind of slipped through his fingers with the Humvee wreck. So, just throwing this out to the panel, what do you think about Brian Pillman as a guy who should have been, and again, this is not just a top guy, this is the top guy, the ace of the company. We started off the show with the Ace of Spades playing, to kind of tie that in. So, yeah, what do you think? Brian Pillman.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on Brian Pillman and his potential. As you just stated with, you know, how good he was in the ring during the periods where he was Flying Brian and when he was Cruiserweight Champion, also when he was in the tag team with Steve Austin, the Hollywood Blondes, he just showcased his wrestling talent. And then just later on in his career, in, as you said, in like 96, 97 and so on, when he started developing that loose cannon gimmick, it really started to become obvious that this guy did have the full package that everyone wants. You know, the ability to speak, the wrestling, you know, technicality, and also the look as well. He just had everything, and it's just like unfortunate that, you know, the accident happened when it did, because it was almost at the point where he was gonna get that almost that big money deal. He was really playing WCW and WWF at the time, and it's just a shame that something like that happened to such a great talent at that exact time.
Well, I think what we'll find with probably all four of our cases that we put forward on this panel, I think they were all a victim of circumstance, just a victim of poor timing. I mean, as you've pointed out with Flying Brian, Loose Cannon, whichever term you want to use to describe Brian Pillman, he was incredibly talented. It did take him a while to find his niche, to find his sort of, I don't want to use the word gimmick, but the promos and things that came later, he really sort of centred in and found it.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Actually, this is, just, yeah, ask your opinion on this, Carl, because as much as I love Brian Pillman, I'm not completely blind to the fact that Pillman's best years in the ring were behind him, I think. I mean, he was great, you know, he was Flying Brian, you know, did a lot, you know, interesting different stuff. The match with Jushin Liger, like I said, was just kind of revolutionary for the time. But at the same time, just when he was declining a little bit, he had a severe back injury, he was really starting to slow down a little bit, and that's when everything else picked up. And there was a little bit of a crossroads there when he started the Loose Cannon gimmick, where he had everything at once. And I think if that guy, before the Humvee wreck, yeah, if he hadn't injured his ankle as bad as he did, and he probably never should have wrestled after that, had that not happened, I think. But this is the thing, you know, talking about, you know, Brian, you know, circumstance being the case. If he hadn't had the Humvee wreck, he wouldn't have gone to the WWF. That's the key.
The thing that you got to remember also with that injury to his ankle as well is that, obviously, whilst there's a lot of debate of whether he should have come back, I think he probably could have. I think the actual question with the ankle was, did he come back too soon?
I don't know. I don't think he ever should have come back, to be honest. They fused it in one place.
Well, that's kind of what we're dealing with here. I mean, I'm going to play a little bit devil's advocate, but Liam, you've already mostly said it, if I'm honest with you. It'd be fairly boring if we all sucked Brian Pillman's dick for that. There we go. That's our first...
It didn't take long, ladies and gentlemen.
I was trying to get there. Okay. It'd be pretty boring if we all agreed too much on this, but you've already kind of said it, which is, at the end of the day, when we break it down, if we take it right back to the Humvee, because what we're saying is, if Brian Pillman didn't die, are we saying that he would have been a top guy after that?
No, absolutely not.
But if it wasn't for the Humvee wreck, as you say, he wouldn't have been in the position. And maybe, I don't even necessarily think he would have had the focus on personality that he moved over to if he hadn't have had the incident. It's so different.
Yeah. It came about as a direct circumstance. What were you going to say, Carl? Sorry?
And feel free to jump in at any point. But I think the reason the WWF at the time looked at him would have been less to do with the in-ring style, because we know Vince has never been
that's
a fan never, of
Cruiserweights. That's never really mattered that much anyway, yeah. You know?
Well, no, up north, as I like to say, it hasn't really mattered so much in-ring. So I think it was the verbal skills that attracted the WWF to him. I still think he would have wound up there.
You think so?
I really do.
Well, this is the thing. As the story goes, and then, you know, this is, you know, Dave Meltzer knew him very well, and this is what he reported. Pillman's entire plan with the Loose Cannon gimmick was to get the WWF to be interested in him so that WCW would make him a bigger offer so that he could stay there. He never really wanted to go, apparently, to the WWF. The only reason he did was because WCW had the clause, and this is the one that got Steve Austin, where if he was injured for more than 90 days, they could release him. And because he knew after that Humvee wreck, I mean, the doctors told him, you can't wrestle anymore. They outright told him, of course, Pillman lied about it. But, I mean, they told him he couldn't wrestle anymore, and he was afraid that if he took the WCW higher offer, that they would cut him, because he knew, ultimately, he wasn't going to last that long. The WWF guaranteed the money at a lower rate, so he jumped there. But that's the thing. I mean, the ideal time, I think, for Pillman was to jump when he did to the WWF, if he could have wrestled, because that's when Sean was champ and size wouldn't have been a factor, and that was the factor of his entire career.
Well, that would have been going back to the idea of, you know, just poor circumstances being what they are. Down south with WCW, obviously you had the influx of Hogan at that time and all the big guys there.
Exactly. So Nash and Hall were coming.
Yeah, Nash and Hall were coming. I think we can all agree he would have never been the top guy in WCW, wouldn't have happened.
Not with the backroom politics that was in that company at the time. That, you know, people like Nash and Hall and Hogan, they would have held him down. I think the key thing to remember, obviously, we can all just fantasy book in our heads what Pillman would have done if he didn't get into that that car accident. You know, where he would have gone. You know, most people believe that if he didn't have that accident, he would have stayed at WCW. But you got to remember how history went from that point, because of just, like, at that time, everybody was going back and forth between the shows. the probably most likely situation would have been, yes, he would have gone back to WCW, he wouldn't have been put over the way he wanted to due to backroom politics, and he would have ended going back to WWF again.
Where Steve Austin would have got popular and would have vouched for him anyway, most likely.
Definitely.
Especially if he had the goods.
He would, because for me, like, if we did like fancy booking, you know, where like he didn't get injured and Shawn Michaels did leave at 98 after WrestleMania 14, I firmly believe that Pillman would have been the next guy for Austin to face. That would have been the obvious program. As soon as Austin was champion, you'd have thought that that would have been the obvious program for Vince to bring in the guy who he knows very well to try and take him out, and Pillman could have the whole jealousy angle and so on and so forth. And
plus,
I think
the fact that he was just fucking nuts, you know, it's a great dynamic with those two. The thing, again, it just kind of reiterate the point with Pillman, with him being a guy who, you know, we've talked about before about the size issue, Vince has always had that kind of thing, and that held him back pretty much his entire WCW career. I know that looks like something you want to talk about.
Well, no, it's just a case of, as we know with Vince, he's got a hard on for bodybuilders, hasn't he? Let's be honest. That's why Luger got the big contract he did at the time.
You're saying Luger was not hired for his in-ring wrestling ability?
I don't think
of podcast is this?
It was his luscious hair they hired him for.
That's what I believe.
His sweet hair.
But you know what? That's a very fair point, Cole. But at the same time, during that period when they did hire Pillman, the WWF was finding it hard to hold on to talent and find talent because WCW was just sweeping everything. So that was actually the great time period where he wasn't actually necessarily looking for the big people, you know, the big muscular wrestlers. He was trying to go for everything, you know, that people like Mick Foley shows that.
He was trying for anything.
He was just trying to get whatever he can and see what works.
But let's be fair, in that time period, he was still booking big guys. Look, Yokozuna's title run, Vader was a failed stretch there, don't get me wrong, but Nash, Ramon was always featured heavily.
But the problem is they all failed, and they always went back to the Bret Harts and the Shawn Michaels, who were of, you know, similar size to Pillman.
Yes they did, but I think it's fair to say Vince never really wanted to go there, did he?
No,
he always felt forced.
And he was always, and what did he do every single time? He was always trying to get the next big guy to fill their spot.
They bought Warrior back, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, exactly. Warrior's a big deal. I mean, that's the thing. I think when summing this up, just to wrap up the Pillman discussion, what I really want to think about this, and I do also want to mention that there are a few people who actually voted for Brian Pillman as well. Lars from the Pro Wrestling Early Message Board, I want to mention him. Rob Simmons mentioned Brian Pillman as well. And as far as I'm concerned, Pillman was a guy who, if you take him for his attributes, absolutely had the potential to be there. He could talk, he could wrestle, he could do so much. But again, circumstances just absolutely fucked it up. So what I'm going to do now, we've kind of found a little bit of mutual ground on Pillman, I think, in the sense that he probably had the skills to do it, but unfortunately it wasn't meant to be no matter what.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day with Brian Pillman, I think what it was actually probably what's going to be with all of our picks is that it's last opportunity as well.
Yeah.
It's not just going to be from the fault of the wrestlers. It's going to be from the fault of the promoters as well. All these guys that we're going to mention definitely had something to be the top stars, and it was the fault of the promoters that weren't able to just, you know, really just hone these guys and use them when they're at their peaks.
Yeah. What we're going to do now, we're going to throw to the panel. We got a hell of a lot of feedback, and I really, really appreciate it. So we're going to look at a few guys. If I butcher anybody's name, I deeply apologise. I'm going to start with Steve Bochenek. I hope I've said that right. As everybody around giggles,
he will kick your ass.
He will. He'll fly from America and beat my ass. Yeah. Magnum TA.
Oh yeah, yeah. Can't argue with Magnum.
Yeah,
TA.
Definitely.
That's an absolutely solid choice right there. I mean, I don't think anyone Carl, argue with it.
No, I'm not going to argue with it. But I think it contrasts a bit in comparison to where we as a panel have gone with our picks, because I think Magnum TA was always going to be the that's again it's circumstances, and ironically a car wreck.
It was again
a natural tie in there. Master of segues, Carl, thank you very much.
Thank you.
One car wreck to another. But yeah, so I mean the Magnum one's interesting because I mean everybody says he would have been NWA champion. Do you think he would have ended up having any kind of longevity as top guy? I mean
he was the you know, the guy they were grooming. It was just like, as this Carl said, you know, he was the guy. It wasn't the fact that maybe he was going to win the championship. He was going to win the championship. That's what it was. That's the angle that they were going with. I think was he going to beat Ric Flair, if I remember right?
Well, I mean, that was like the long-term vision was because Magnum just had so much going for him. Great look, you know, a prodigy. He was young, he was grown, he's a puppy with big paws. Everybody could see that he was going to be great.
He was the exact opposite of Ric Flair at that time, which is why, you know, Ric Flair was the kind of preeny, kind of glittery you know, pretty boy, I guess, and Magnum TA was that tough kind of guy, which kind of really kind of interested the crowd at the time.
How do you reckon he would have done in the WWF? Had he gone?
Probably the same as everyone else, like Dusty Rhodes and so on. They probably would have put him in polka dots and made him shave the moustache off.
No.
They
would have given him like an awesome name like Chuck Steak. They would have made him a complete cartoon.
That is money right there.
Yeah, they would have made a complete
Chuck
cartoon.
Steak. Chuck Steak.
All right, we're going to get to Don Peterson, who suggested, and this is one that's, you know, this is one of the guys that automatically comes to mind, is Ted DiBiase.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who, you know, never won the WWF title, everybody thinks that, yeah, WrestleMania 4 he was supposed to.
Yeah.
Do you think that he had what it took to be the ace of the company, though? Because that's a different thing to being just the champion.
Yeah, he definitely had the opportunity to be the big heel, and the big heel for a long time. I mean, because this was like the precursor to the Vince McMahon gimmick of, you know, the millionaire guy who can do what he wants because he's got money and he thinks he's got the influence. And I think, like, yeah, again, that's another missed opportunity with Ted DiBiase, as he never really won that title, and they never really did anything with him.
I want to know what you guys think, but I don't see it as much of a missed opportunity.
No, I think they got all of the mileage they possibly could out of that character.
I agree.
To your point, Vince definitely liked to vicariously live through the Million Dollar Man.
Yeah.
But I think it was probably one of the better things, and this is not something I'm going to advocate very often, but I think it was one of the better things that Honky Tonk Man had the strop that he did.
I don't know how he pulled that off, by the way, and then lived to tell the story for a while.
No, absolutely no idea how he managed to pull that off, but I think the fact that he refused to drop the belt to Savage, the IC belt to Savage, and the fact that that meant that Savage won the tournament. I mean, just imagine that.
Yeah.
Savage doesn't win the tournament, DiBiase wins it.
And Savage chases?
Just imagine, would they have gone with a year-long build to the next year's main event?
Hogan getting DiBiase
and Hogan?
That just seems...
You can't picture it,
especially at that time when it was so pro-babyface, the WWF.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, as well, is in my view, with DiBiase, particularly with DiBiase, I mean, that's one of the big gimmicks ever.
Yeah,
it's Taker,
absolutely.
It's Million Dollar Man. Honestly, I can't. That's my top tier. Those two.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. That's going to be another show, folks.
Yes,
I'll be
it
back
is.
For that one.
Best gimmicks of all time.
But I mean, it's right up there. But at the end of the day, looking back, do you think of DiBiase as, oh, he's that guy who never won the title, or do you just think of him as, man, he was awesome?
Yeah, he's that awesome guy who's doing those segments where he's making the kid bounce the basketball and then kicking it away from him.
I don't think he needs to be the champion.
And
I really don't.
Would you remember him any better if he was champion?
No.
No, wouldn't
absolutely
change a
not.
Thing. So, in my opinion, he didn't need it.
I don't think he needed it either. I think that actually him having it, I think, would have kind of exposed him a little bit, maybe, as a guy who couldn't, you know, in terms of like charisma at the top. I mean, think of how heavy WWF was for so long with Hogan and Savage and those guys. DiBiase had charisma, obviously, and he could do a hell of a promo, and he had the greatest laugh of all time. But I don't know that he was that kind of transcendent ace character that the WWF thrived on in that kind of cartoony era.
And just think of the benefit that we had getting to see the Million Dollar Belt, and that to me just added an extra layer to the character. It was the hypocrisy of, I can't win the belt, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get to one more before we get to Luke Edwards' pick. The great Rick Morris, Carl Jones, and a man you're a great fan of as well as I am, and I want to give a shout out to the fdhlounge.blogspot.com, because if you don't listen to those shows, then you damn well need to. Rick Morris, and he wasn't the only one to say this, Razor Ramon, probably one of the first names that comes to mind when you think of this.
Definitely
I want to
first,
read what he
definitely.
Said, because he said, simply because Vince did, you know, kept toggling between smaller and bigger guys back in the 90s, from Brett to Hogan and Yoko, to Brett, back to Diesel, to Brett and Shawn, Razor's the one guy in the middle of the spectrum, a much better worker than a big guy like a Diesel and a Yoko, but bigger than Brett and Shawn, who's the perfect middle ground. I heard him say this on one of the WrestleMania Anthology podcasts he did with Kyle Ross. He's the great compromise between the two extremes. Why do you think that? Yeah, was it just personal problems? Do you think that like Vince always had one kind of a bit of an eye on him? Like he did, maybe why do you think he never kind of trusted Razor with that?
It's really tricky. I mean, like if Vince McMahon was ever going to use Razor Ramon, I think it definitely his opportunity would have been 1995. I think because like particularly when you look back at that year anyway, which was pretty putrid, but. If there was ever an opportunity where he was looking for someone new to be in that main event, I mean, eventually he picked Diesel. He kind of picked the wrong guy, really, because, like, obviously Diesel proved that he wasn't a success in that position, whilst Razor was incredibly popular still at that time. Also, he was more proven than Diesel as well. And I think Vince made a really bad decision when he went with Diesel for 95 for that reign, as opposed to someone like Razor Ramon.
I think Razor's time might ideally have been a little bit before, because just speaking for myself as a fan at the time, by the time 95 came around, I kind of thought that Razor was kind of typecast in the middle because he'd been involved with the Intercontinental title for so long. I don't know if that's any kind of popular opinion, but...
I would agree with that, yeah. And I think the perfect time for Ramon would have been after the first ladder match with Shawn. That would have been the time to push him up. But far be it from me to disagree with the greatest man in Western civilization, Rick Morris.
Exactly, no one ever would.
But I just think he mentions compromise a lot there, and compromise doesn't lead to the big star. Compromise isn't the guy. And yeah. I just think, can any of us sit here now and say, if we use 94 as an example, say, yeah, no, that didn't work. He shouldn't have gone with Brett. He should have gone with Razor.
Very good point.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah,
it's an interesting question. Maybe you can cast it back before. What if he gets the push when Luger did instead?
Oh, he certainly.
He couldn't have done worse than Luger,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Couldn't have done any worse than the Lex Express, which I think was actually stuck in neutral for most of 93.
A Razor Ramon version of Lex Express would have been amazing,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, it would have been pretty glorious.
The Machismo Express.
Yeah, there you go.
Chico Crusade.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Jesus Christ. Rick Morris, Russ Jones, Matt D, DMJ from Pro Wrestling Only, they all said Scott Hall. DMJ went elaborating and said, I know he's not always rated so high, and he was certainly more technically skilled than Nash, and had he stayed sober and motivated, maybe even coming back to the WWE in the year 99 or 2000, it's hard not to see him having good matches and feuds with guys like The Rock, Triple H, Undertaker, and Steve Austin, who by then were all pretty much wrestling the kind of main event brawling style that Hall wouldn't have been out of his league doing. There's a lot of ifs with Scott Hall, and I think that the ifs with Scott Hall are the reason why he never got there in the end. Yeah. Moving swiftly along, Luke Edwards has his choice for this, so
well,
go ahead.
Yes, I do. Okay, I'm going for something a little different. Obviously, I think everyone around the table can agree we've probably come up with a pretty large list of names.
Oh, yeah.
I burn it down to one which I'm probably going to get some flack for in some places, but I'm going with Ron Simmons. Or Farouk, some people. No, Farouk is fine. I'm fine with Farouk. Here's the thing, okay? I know a lot of people are going to jump at me immediately and say, okay, hey, this guy's a Hall of Famer. He was, what's the quote? The first African-American WCW
champion. They didn't want to say black at the time, so yeah.
Essentially, you actually look back at it, though. That's like in 10 years from now, if somebody says, yeah, but Rey Mysterio was the first little heavyweight champion. He's not going to be remembered for that, folks. Because we know what happened. And with Farouk, with Simmons, it's the same way. He had a 5-month run of championship. As a champion in WCW. Okay, won it on a house show. He had his defenses. His pay-per-view defenses consisted of a match in the middle of the card against Cactus Jack, Clash of Champions 20. The next pay-per-view, Halloween Havoc, he was not on the main event because Sting and Jake Roberts had to have a coal miner's glove match.
And he's wrestling the Barbarian.
I was getting there, the Barbarian, yeah. And Jesus. So his next one, he was supposed to, told he was supposed to wrestle Rick Rude, ended up wrestling Dr. Death, as third for a main event at Starrcade 92. He never main evented as a champion.
No.
Okay, he lost it back to Vader.
There's been plenty of examples of that as well.
That's what I'm saying.
Cold feet.
Exactly. I mean, and he went right back. He said it himself in interviews. He was dropped right back down to the mid card immediately afterwards. It was a gimmick. The whole it's wrestling. But you know what I mean. And then there's loads of little bits though that when you start looking into Ron Simmons, which as you may have guessed, I have. you run into things like his tight. He had like a 8-9 month ECW run of all things, and he cut some He did a great promo on Shane Douglas. It's on YouTube if you look it up. Ron Simmons ECW promo. Great promo, really great promo. The match itself was, Shane Douglas, not the massive fan. Although I wouldn't be surprised if he appeared on a few people's lists, if I'm absolutely honest with you.
He didn't appear on anybody's.
Really not?
No one thought the French fries was going to be the
thing. I could see the argument at some darker periods of wrestling.
Yeah, but the important thing is, he is champion of stacking shelves at Target.
Come on!
The guy's
making a living.
I'm pretty sure he's only second or third best on Target's roster, if I'm honest with you. Okay, so he moves up to WWF, gets that terrible shiny gladiator gimmick.
Yeah.
Okay, which everyone's trying to put out. Yeah, you didn't remember that, did you? It's coming back now.
Farouk-san.
I gotta try and drink to forget it.
There you go. And then you're thinking, okay, we're thinking Nation of Domination. You forget that the Nation of Domination, everyone thinks Nation of Domination, they think the latter incarnation of it. You know, okay,
I think
you're trying
D.O.
not
Brown.
To. You're thinking D.O. D'Lo Brown. You're thinking
The Rock,
you know,
for Christ's sake.
The Rock, Mark Henry. You're not thinking Farouk, and also you're forgetting that it went for nearly a year before The Rock, and it had a, it was completely different. It wasn't a African American focus in the first place. It was more of a wider thing. And like I say, it didn't get Farouk anywhere. Yeah. I mean, you know, Crush, Nation of Domination originally. Yeah. Go Crush.
It was dreads.
And at the end of the day, he never held a singles title in the WWE. He never even had a crappy little hardcore title run. It never happened.
Yeah.
And he's not a bad worker. I don't think anyone's going to walk around saying that Ron Simmons was a bad... He's a really decent power guy. Kind of hard to see if you look at some of his WCW title matches. Because, well, one was against the Barbarian, which never works out well. And when he won the title against Vader, the match actually isn't... You know, it's not too bad. He shows off some good stuff, but there's only so much a guy of his moveset and power and technique is going to do to a guy like Vader. So, please, shoot me down,
Well, Jeff. My first point on Ron Simmons would be, and I think this is actually this is reflected in the WWF at the time, because right when Ron Simmons was made the champion, the WWF did the same thing with Bret Hart, where they took a guy who was in the middle and they shot him right up. And Ron Simmons was, like, at the time, he was like the number 5 babyface in the company. Wrestle War 92, which was the first show, I think, with Watts either at the helm or he was just about to take over. Sting's Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance, one of the best War Games matches of all time.
Oh, great.
But Sting's Squadron was the top 5 babyfaces in the company, and Ron Simmons wasn't among them. Ron Simmons was just taken from complete mid-card obscurity and just shot like a rocket up to the main event. And I think that thing of taking the guy in the middle, putting the belt on him, and trying to make him immediately without any kind of preparation beforehand, I think it doomed Simmons and it doomed Brett.
I think it was probably a little bit more simple than that. I think, as you said, like, because they just took him from almost obscurity, I think it was just simply that he was the classic gimmick champion for, you know, like the press and so on. He was going to be African American champion. They just thought, like, okay, Watts probably just turned around. It probably didn't even, like, preferably, you know, wanted Farouk himself. He's just like, damn it, you know, I want to put this title on an African American because surely that's going to get some press.
Well,
that's
going to
get some attention.
He made it. Watts' big success was JYD, and unfortunately, I don't want to, you know. The whole thing about Bill Watts being a racist.
Speaking of JYD.
Yeah.
There's another guy.
The whole thing about Bill Watts.
That whole territory got hot because of Junkyard Dog.
JYD. And that's, I hate to say it, but it's that thing of, you know, we'll just take another black guy. It's not really the best mentality in the world, you know.
But I think it's as simple as that. You look at Watts' history with the Junkyard Dog, and to a lesser extent, Butch Reed. He had a track
record. I love Butch Reed.
He had a track record, previous life, so to speak, of pushing the African American, and it worked in places like New Orleans, in Louisiana, in the South. There, it worked.
Yeah. But the thing is, JYD appealed to. That's the thing about that I think was missed in all this. Even Bill Watts, maybe himself, JYD didn't just appeal to black people. He appealed to everybody because he was charismatic as hell, and everybody knew what it was. And that's the big mark against Simmons.
You think that's just what he was doing, though? He was just basically trying to just replicate what he already knew worked. He wasn't trying anything new. He was literally going back to the old book of what worked, and he's just trying to replicate Junkyard Dog. And just Ron Simmons was there at the time.
Absolutely. It's a case of a booker who was stuck in a time warp. Now, for me, I'd say no with regards to Ron Simmons. He was a solid worker. I don't think he was good enough. But that's not to say it couldn't have worked. If you'd have taken the time and effort, in particular, to push his college football background, the fact that his jersey was retired at Florida State, make a big deal of that, it maybe could have worked.
Well, Jim Ross tried.
Well, that's it.
Jim Ross did try, yeah.
You see it in his title match with Vader originally. Is a lot of that is immediately pushed. And obviously, it's a bit short-term. I mean, it's a bit out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he got the title shot on the damn lottery, as I recall.
Yeah,
I think it was some kind of lotto thing.
Yeah,
it's like, my God, really?
I love that angle, by the way.
Well, to that point, to think maybe a little bit outside of the box, they could have maybe played up Vader's
football background
as well. That would have been the natural segue into it.
Great athletes.
Yeah.
Do you think? I mean, Luke. I mean, this is your guy. I mean, do you think Simmons had the charisma for this?
Well, here's the thing. Is you don't remember that? I mean, yes. Okay. Right now, he's a walking catchphrase, which is pretty much the best thing you can be as a retired wrestler.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get paid for that catchphrase. Austin is sorted for life.
That's an easy day's work.
Yeah, keep cashing them checks.
That's it. Yeah. But you see, the thing is, like I say, I wasn't really a big. But when I started thinking about his charisma. The thing I like about Simmons' charisma is, as I say, I've recommended the ECW promo. There are a few others. He didn't get to cut as many as I think he should have done. Because Nation Domination gimmick stifled the kind of charisma he has to an extent. And
what about Doom?
Thank you for that. But I believe The thing with Simmons, the thing I love about Simmons' promos, I believe every damn word. And there is so few wrestlers, particularly of that era, where I do believe that they believe everything they're saying.
Really?
Simmons, oh, yeah. Dude, watch the CCW.
I think a lot of people had that back then.
Really? Though. I don't. I really don't. And I did as a kid.
Yeah.
But the more I've gone back and watched it, the more I've gone, people don't talk like that.
Yeah.
And I know that wrestlers spoke bigger than life, particularly back then, and they still do. But I like to be able to believe what they're saying. Like I say, I recommend a lot of his earlier promos, his fiery promos. I believe that that man was going to go and hurt someone in a really good way.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, you mentioned the whole Nation of Domination, the Sly from the Creativity. BP from Pro Wrestling Only also mentioned Farouk as a candidate.
Yay, I'm not quite alone.
You're not alone, no. But Farouk, in the early incarnation of the Nation of Domination, like we said, was the guy that was... I mean, do you think that, again, the heel thing as a top heel thing?
You see, I don't know. That's the thing, that the Nation stuff, it just never... I don't know, it never really...
They put him against Taker at King of the Ring 97. I never got the impression anybody honestly saw him as anything.
No, I think the problem with the Nation in the early incarnation of the Nation was, outside of Farouk, it was a bit of a comedy. It was a cavalcade of Clarence Mason,
yes.
PG-13,
nameless, faceless guys in suits and pie hats.
You're just waiting for them to all, you know, come out the back of the little tiny car at the circus.
looking at obviously, you know, we've talked about like WCW and WWF and his periods in both those companies. In your mind, then, Luke, when did you think was his best opportunity? Do you think it was in WCW, or do you think it was in WWF?
That's the thing. I mean, I think that there was potential all the way through, from his late WCW run to the early WWE run. Okay, the WWF run. My God, I really caught myself saying that. That is depressing.
Yeah.
But early WWF run. I mean, honestly, if he didn't come in with the Gladiator thing, I think there's a much better. I think he's a guy who works almost gimmickless. I think there is a lot of potential in him as a person with his own personality being himself, which was a lot of what the APA stuff was, when you can't deny that he was charismatic in that period
in a
subtle way, and that's what it was. And if he'd have come in as that Ron Simmons that ended up being the APA Ron Simmons, ends up very much being the damn Ron Simmons,
okay.
I mean, that guy, I mean, very real for the time, possibly a bit too low key for the audience, but I don't know. I think there's a lot there.
I think it's the same thing with Pillman. It was the missed opportunity.
Of course,
it was just a missed opportunity for him, and that was the best time period for him, because again, they didn't have many stars at the time. They were trying to look for new people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe Farouk should have been one of those stars that they should have invested in.
And one final comment, let us not forget that at the time, Vince already had Ahmad Johnson. And that's what he was working with at the time, as I recall. That was a thing. I mean, they put him in a feud straight away. Great idea.
Ahmad Johnson.
But typical, let's get two black guys and so as his rivals.
Vince is only going to push one black guy at a time. At the end of the day.
Jesus!
Oh, come on! Find a time that you prove me wrong. Honest to God.
That's brutally
go
honest.
Through!
That's
the Rock, honest. The Rock and Booker T.
How much was Booker T really
he's
ever
half
put?
Black. He's half Samoan.
This is not
well.
An argument we want to get into.
let's move away from this.
Moving swiftly along.
Okay, Booker T and Bobby Lashley.
Oh, maybe. Depends on the period. Booker T. I'd argue that Booker T was never pushed. Ever.
I sincerely hope that is the first and last time that Black Lesnar is mentioned during this podcast.
African American Lesnar.
Just for the record, I have no problems with Bobby Lashley, just because he could also kick my ass.
Again, so moving swiftly along, Von Simmons, I think we've kind of, I don't know if we've really made an agreement on Von Simmons, but moving along. The great Rick Morris waiting with a second suggestion.
Hey, he's getting more airtime than we are. What the hell?
I'm sorry. Arn Anderson.
Oh, yes.
Arn Anderson.
Dad.
No, you're not. I'm not having it, Rick Morris. You don't. Oh, forget it. Yeah.
For as popular as he was as a face in 1993 WCW, he could have gotten a push as the top guy, realistically, before Flair came back. The fans always responded to him really great, and I think he maybe could have been a poor man's Stone Cold back in the day in terms of a no-frills, heel-flavoured loner baby face. This is a tricky one, Double A.
I think Arn Anderson is the same thing as you were saying just a moment ago about Ron Simmons, is that Arn Anderson was believable. And that's the thing, like with his work in the ring and when he was on the mic, you believe that this guy, once he gets you in that ring, he's going to kick the crap out of you. He's going to work you over.
No one's denying how good Arn Anderson is. However, the question is he an ace?
You see, here's the thing. I agree that I wouldn't even go as far as necessarily low rent Steve Austin. I think there's definitely potential there, but at that time, at that period, is that going to work?
No, I absolutely don't think it's going to work.
That...
You've got to remember that the time of Austin was very organic. It was an audience rebellion to some extent. And you've got to look at the outside world away from the wrestling bubble at the time. It was all about counterculture. It was about defiance, vulgar language, sex on TV, all those sorts of things. Society was changing.
Mm.
And that wasn't the case in 1993.
Yeah. Was age maybe an issue in this as well? Because during those kind of 90s, he was kind of getting on a bit now. So, everyone always wants to cheer for the fresh, young baby face,
I will
face,
say that
Arn
was born looking middle-aged.
Exactly. Yeah. Was his better period in the 80s, when, unfortunately, he was the second man to Ric Flair? Was the 80s his period to break out of the shell?
Here's something that I've seen that's really, really interesting. What's Arn Anderson's best singles match? This was on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. This is actually a very tricky one. There's some matches with Dustin Rhodes that are pretty great.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen them, what do you say is on
well,
best singles match?
I'm probably going to say something a little controversial now. I kind of enjoyed his match with Ric Flair.
I like that match.
Was it four ball? Yeah,
four ball.
I enjoyed that match just because it came across like it was going to be a one-time deal. We'd never seen it before. And in a way, Arn Anderson was a little bit of the underdog in that, just due to the fact that Ric Flair, Ric Flair.
I was stunned when Arn Anderson went there. I was like, this is the time when WCW Worldwide was on ITV every Saturday afternoon. When I found that Arn Anderson beat Ric Flair, I was stunned.
Strangely, that was also the match where I realised that he is my dad.
Well,
it's a shame that in some aspects that match was the vehicle to get Pillman on side.
Yeah.
As much as anything else, not that I disagree with Pillman as a horseman. Not that I disagree with Pillman as a horseman. I really like that idea. I think it would have worked.
But it wasn't about
even longer.
Arn, is your point.
But it wasn't about Arn. It wasn't about the match really. When they moved away from it.
The question. I mean, I understand the point about Arn Anderson, but I mean, 1993 is a tricky one with WCW because WCW 1993 is fucking just an abomination. The Cole twins, Big Sky, Charlie Norris.
Wrestling was in general.
Carl,
as well.
I'm going to need another beer for this. We're going to go into nine.
I'm running low already.
Pretty poor Roman as a horseman didn't exactly strike the spot.
In 93, we still got Firebreaker Chip.
I think he was gone by then. Maybe he was gone by then.
Oh, there is a God, maybe.
Small mercies, folks.
Andy Howitt also said Arn Anderson, and he also said Rick Rude.
Yeah, well,
really? Obvious one.
I don't think it's obvious at all.
Really?
He was right there on my list.
He was one of the first, along with Razor Ramon, that I thought of.
I think it's one of those obvious questions because he was right on the bubble. But when I look at Rude, I don't believe that he's the guy you can build a company around. I really don't.
Not as the babyface, not as the lead babyface. He was never babyface material.
Not
but as the lead
that.
Heel, I think he certainly was had the opportunity and the ability to be the lead heel.
See, I think the problem there is he's too big a guy, and the way his mannerisms were, his characteristics, he couldn't really play the complete weasel, chicken shit heel. It was keeping hold of his title from the chasing baby face, just by the skin of his teeth. And by the same token, I don't think he was enough of a threat. People didn't see him as enough of a threat to the baby face to realistically think, this is the guy that's going to beat the babyface.
This is the era of Hogan and Warrior and jacked up babyfaces.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, when Rude was at the top, and granted the booking was pretty terrible and then he was a bit of a retread feud for the Warriors as we've discussed before, but I mean, I never thought that Rude had a prayer as the WWF champion. Moving along, Carl, because now we're going to go on to your pick. So now it's time for you to grace us with your dulcet tones once more.
Well, thank you very much. Now, again, you guys might jump on this one a bit and you might think, what are you talking about? He was a featured guy, he was up there. But for my pick, I'm going with the man that was once dubbed the number 5 babyface in Mid-South
by TT the Rooster,
by Terry Taylor. Well, what can we say about the Red Rooster other than
he was on my list, he was definitely up now.
Well, he's on a list where female employees are concerned.
Oh,
but that's a different matter.
I heard that,
but now I'm going with Jake the Snake Roberts. And if you'll indulge me with this one, I've got two time periods in mind where I think it really could have worked.
Okay.
You don't need me to go on about his psychology, how great his promos were. Everyone knows that. I'd just be repeating what everyone already knows to the point of ad nauseum.
Mm.
But I think in 91 it could have worked if they turned him earlier, and I think him and Hogan at Mania 7 would have worked. Forget the Iraq angle, forget the Gulf War.
I wish I could.
well, you know, it's etched on all our minds, unfortunately. But try and just, you know, push it to the back. Just imagine the promos that Roberts could have come out with. Because he didn't have to be the cartoonish Saddam Hussein sympathiser. Yeah, he just had that cold, raspy voice that just would have worked.
It certainly would have been a better program than what they went with in the end.
Rude was a bad choice, and I think if they turned Jake in 90, if Jake had been turned earlier, I mean, the thing that's weird with Roberts is, and this is, you know, again, whether it's the tenor of the times or what, when Jake was turned heel, and Jake was an awesome heel in 1991 with the angle with Randy Savage, it's funny reading the old observers looking back where Jake wasn't a very good draw as a heel against Savage.
I wonder if that's, I'm not trying to make excuses for my pick or anything, I wonder if that may have been the business at the time, just going out. I don't know if any one individual could have sort of arrested the slide, perhaps, but I would say the other time period I think it could have worked was when he moved to WCW. Now, I know circumstances being what they are, he wasn't around very long, it was very brief, he was gone allegedly because of issues with his wife, you know, not that that's too hard to believe with Jake Roberts, but if it hadn't been
two at a time with toys
two at a time with toys and chocolate. But I think as the lead heel in that company with Sting chasing and just, you know, and that and WCW, it still had its sort of its core audience with the NWA crowd, you know, the Jim Crockett crowd, what was left of it at that point, and it was still very much a promotion where it was all about the heel champion and the chase, as opposed to the big babyface champion up north.
The NWA kept that formula for a long time because they had it with Vader 2. Yeah.
Vader 2, the sequel.
No.
I actually find it really interesting that the two periods that you think that he could have been at the top was both when he was a heel. And that, wouldn't you thought that maybe one of his opportunities would have been a lot earlier than that when he was a babyface? I think I'm a bit sketchy on the time period exactly, but there was definitely a time earlier where he was going to feud with Hogan.
In the mid 87,
and like he DDT'd Hogan and got such a reaction for it that, you know, they turned him babyface because of it.
But this
and
is always
like,
weird.
Wouldn't that have been the period, that time?
The problem with that is I'm somewhat skeptical.
Who's the source for that story?
The source for that story is Jake Roberts on his own DVD, and no one outside the company's ever seen the footage. You know, if anyone
Hogan acknowledged that it happened.
The fact that it happened, but
reaction, it's definitely popular.
But the reaction from the crowd is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, exactly.
If anyone by chance was in that crowd and is listening to this podcast,
please email me.
Absolutely.
Give us the footage.
Yeah.
But I don't think Roberts would have had a chance as a babyface because it was still the era of Hogan, and Hogan was still drawing. He was over like gangbusters at that point.
If anything, I mean, you. Early 87, that's when
they're building to Andre.
Exactly. I mean, he would arguably never been harder than that period of time. He hadn't gone stale. This was Hogan's era. I don't think anybody was going to get in over Hogan. Oh, Luke, what do you think about Jake?
You see, I, like every other sensible human being on the goddamn planet, loves Jake Roberts. Okay, but... Oh, I am so tempted to play a bit of devil's advocate here.
This is just because I kind of shut down Ron Simmons.
No, I knew you would, and I hoped you would, sir. This is what I like. If we were all agreeing, I'd be bored out of my skull. I gotta say, Jake Roberts, I don't know how well the character lends itself to a primary heel for a company. Now, I love the character. I do. Okay. And it's hard to compare him to anyone else, I guess. Oh, you see, the times are too different for me to just stand out and say, because I'm just trying to, as a reference point, say, I don't know, Bray Wyatt. It's you know, it's not quite there, but you know what I get. And Bray Wyatt is doing some amazing stuff, but main event angleness to it, it works better almost as a subterfuge level. In fact, as Jake Roberts, if I was going to put him as the main guy, I mean, you keep the menace and everything subterfuged in the mid-card until the snake strikes. Yeah. And he's on top, but only for a very brief time. I don't see it lasting, because I don't think you can maintain that evenness when, in that era particularly, he is guaranteed to lose.
Yeah.
The
heels did not win the big matches in WWF and the E's.
No, I guess, I suppose to Jake Roberts' point, his argument was always that he was the guy who got the guys ready for Hogan.
I think it was cast perfectly as the number two babyface or number three babyface. I don't think that he could have been the top babyface really ever, to be quite honest.
I also think, as kind of history's kind of proven, no matter whether the promoters or not wanted to give him the push, whether he did get popular with the crowd, at the end of the day, Jake was always going to self-destruct. Yeah, and he, in fairness, yeah, he was always going to prevent himself from being the top guy.
I mean, if obviously we're all talking in hypotheticals, but if we were looking for a reason other than the fact that it was the era of the bodybuilder and it was Hogan's time, if we're looking away from that, I think we all know what Jake's demons were.
Yeah. God,
I hate the term demons. Let's just call it what it is. He was a drug addict.
Yeah. He's a drug addict.
And the fact that he had an addiction to drugs and alcohol meant that he was always going to hit the self-destruct button.
And that might have been why they never pushed him, because they couldn't rely on him.
And in the kayfabe era, it wasn't publicised, but everyone in the company knew.
Yeah.
I'm sure Vince knew. Vince
has spent him a number of times.
Yeah, Vince was probably at the bar with him on a few occasions, pounding some 12 ounces.
Well, Robert Simmons also said Jake Roberts, so mine and your picks were replicated by Simo.
Excelsior!
Exactly, so here we go.
Wow.
I'm gonna run off a few more names. We're going to be doing these ones a little bit quicker because we have a few to get through here. Tully Blanchard.
C. Arn Anderson.
Oh yeah,
actually,
that's
very
succinct.
You know what? I think Tully's more of that sleazy, great heel. I believe he could have been an ace.
I don't know.
I really think
I love Tully Blanchard as well, but I think he did have that glassing of being either a tag champ or a United States champ.
But just to piggyback on your point quickly, you mentioned about Arn Anderson and name those single great Arn Anderson singles matches. You instantly think Tully Blanchard when you think Arn Anderson, don't you? I think the mind goes there.
Magnum TA. Magnum TA, the I Quit match.
There are a lot of great Tully matches.
I mean, that's the thing. Much more than I can make the point for Arn Anderson. I think that he had a lot more in terms of personality. Obviously, Arn could talk his ass off.
I think he wasn't quite in the shadow of Ric Flair as Arn Anderson was, because Arn Anderson was the right hand man, while Tully kind of was his own person within the Four Horsemen.
All right, we're going to get to Chris Hills here, because Chris Hill had about six or seven, and I think we can pretty much smash these through in fairly short order. Mike Awesome?
Yeah.
No. Definitely not.
The thing is, absolutely I love not. Mike Awesome, but no, he's not there.
I love Mike Awesome. The size and the wrestling ability, he didn't think he had. Take away the toys, it doesn't work.
As the top, how? In what way? Face? Heel? What? What was he other than a fucking good powerbomb and an ability?
And being a great product of Paul Heyman.
Yes.
I think more than anything else.
Paul Heyman isn't building him, who the hell is going to do the job?
Paul Heyman got him over, precisely.
I want someone... say outside of Japan to tell me who his great feud was when you take away Masato Tanaka.
We never had a great feud. Then again, having said that,
it was never given one
besides Tanaka.
Alright, here's another one.
Okay, next.
Abyss.
Oh, the Undercane. No, definitely not the Undercane. Definitely not Joseph Parks.
Oh god!
I think that
Luke's looking like he's on the fence here.
But that idea,
he could probably have been the man in TNA, but nowhere else.
That's the point I was going to make. You could build TNA around him, but hey. So, but I will say that different time, different place.
I don't.
Got skills. I don't say you build.
I don't think
30 years earlier.
an ace? No way. He's the Hogan jobber of the month. Honestly.
Yeah, I'm never gonna get Devil's Advocate quite this far. I can't do it, guys. Sorry.
If I can sum Abyss up, it'd be a case of being the man in TNA is akin to being the most attractive person on the burns unit of a hospital.
So not a TNA fan.
Yeah. Oh.
Is that why he wears masks?
Oh god, no.
Alright, Perry Saturn.
No.
You
can't rely on Perry Saturn.
Look at the man.
Perry Saturn, as I recall, was the man who vanished off the face of the earth.
Yeah. And also seemed to have a relationship with a mop as well.
That was one of his better gimmicks.
Oh god.
Okay, moving swiftly along to another one that I really can't wait for your reaction for, Carl. Mark Jindrak.
Ladies and gentlemen, Carl Jones will now talk about Mark Jindrak.
What was the person's name who submitted these again?
Chris Hill.
Well, if ever there was a poster boy for contraception, it would be Chris Hill.
I'd like to apologise for everybody listening.
No, Chris Hill, I'm very sorry.
No, to the Jindrak family.
No.
Fuck Jindrak.
He should apologise for not only having that thought, but for sharing it with the world.
I've got to agree with him, I'm sorry.
I apologise to Chris Hill for Carl James' comments, I don't endorse them.
The rest of us do, to be clear.
He did say Brian Pillman as well.
Yeah, but who hasn't said Brian Pillman at this point?
And he also said Raven.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And actually,
Raven's a tricky one.
Raven was the guy I was thinking very heavily of making the case for.
I would pitch the exact same thing I said with Jake Roberts, which is I don't think you can sustain. Even Raven's era is slightly different. But I don't think you can sustain the good Raven, the heel Raven, that really the work, the flop Raven.
Yeah.
You can't sustain that as a top heel. Well, face, there's options.
Well, this is the thing.
That is the point in time where you could get that fan turn, the Wyatt, the thing that's happening with Wyatt
right now, you'd
get that, and I don't know how it works. I think it's Raven, too tricky to build anything on.
I think Raven could have been a top star in like the local, you know, like ECW or TNA, but well, as far as WCW and WWF, no, I don't think he could have been.
I'm pretty sure you could be the headliner in TNA, Junior Chase.
You think I could?
I just don't think it's worth your time.
I don't want to work with Eric Young though.
I think that Raven is a classic. I mean, ECW, I mean, he was the ace for about a year, working with Dreamer and Sandman as ECW champion, and being the guy that fought the Terry Gordy that would come in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you take him, you know, if that works in a bigger context or in a long term way.
Are we really talking, you know, top of ECW being?
Plus, if we're talking about Jake Roberts' demons, this also plays a factor with Raven.
I think again, I'm gonna hammer the point home about. The outside world. Now, I think that it worked well in ECW. The character would have worked well anywhere, don't get me wrong, you know, used properly. But I don't think fans would have naturally gravitated to that character in one of the two big promotions as the top guy.
No, I'd agree with that. Also, the poster loses points for not writing, "What about Raven?"
Yeah,
just saying. You lost points. I don't know what to tell you.
All right. Well, moving along. G. John Chase with the final man to go. And I understand that we're going to have a bit of a heated debate about this one.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, everyone made some valid points and some opinions on the different wrestlers. And a lot of them I also shared myself. But when I decided upon my choice, I looked at all the people that I favoured. And they were either from the 80s or 90s, in which there were plenty of other people who were just like them that never got their opportunities. And so I actually looked more closer to home in our time period right now, where I'm looking within the last 10 years. And so my pick is Mr. Kennedy. Wait for it, folks.
No, don't do it.
Kennedy.
Well, I've just lost a bunch of listeners. So
I'm
with them, I'm gone.
I thought this guy had it. I mean, like, obviously, like, probably history now tells that he probably didn't, but
well, that's the greatest case you could have made. Yeah.
But you know, but like, you know, but from what happened to him, because, and that's like, that's, you know, thanks to TNA. But you know, at the time, you know, when he first came in, he had everything.
There was
he had the mic skills, he had the look, he was good in the ring, and they did everything. You know, putting him in programs with The Undertaker quite early on in his WWE run. And you know, they were really throwing everything at this guy. You know, he won Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 23. That didn't fare too well due to circumstances. And then, you know, he was actually going to be the planned offspring of Vince McMahon. There was going to be this huge storyline which would reveal that Ken Kennedy was Vince McMahon's offspring. And obviously, again, due to circumstances, that fell through and it ended up being Hornswoggle.
Dumb fuck stupid.
Yeah, which is just ridiculous.
Are you trying to say that Hornswoggle wouldn't... you're saying Kennedy would have got over more than Hornswoggle off that?
Certainly.
For the record.
Yeah. Certainly.
Okay,
certainly.
I've got to disagree.
I understand really? the whole thing about Mr. Kennedy's career trajectory. At one point, looked like this guy was going to be around for a long time in a big way. The reason why he never was... I mean, it came to light. It came to fruition. I mean, honestly, you couldn't make a better argument than the one that happened in real life, that he was probably going to be the ace, and every reason why he couldn't be is happened. Injury prone, not as good a worker, didn't blend in with guys like Shawn and Cena, and more importantly than everything, is absolute utter stupidity at the worst times.
He was certainly a victim of the circumstances. Backroom politics and his own stupidity. You know, two of those, you know, is circumstantial, but the stupidity was gonna always be there, I guess. Every time he put his foot in his mouth.
If there was a pile of shit after that whole Benoit thing, anywhere in the world, he was able to find a way to stick his foot in it.
Yeah.
I mean, going out on all these shows and saying there's no drugs in wrestling and getting popped for steroids.
I think it's just a real shame, because like, he really did have it. I mean, like, when you've seen those certain moments, because at that time period, you know, Cena and Orton and Batista were kind of like the guys they were pushing, but there seemed to be like, you know, this kind of new group that they were trying to do something different with, you know, and Kennedy was a part of it. You know, MVP was there, and Edge, they were moving up into the main event as well. And it's just like, Kennedy seemed to be just the guy that kind of had it, definitely more than MVP anyway.
Now, when you say he had it, now I'm not going to argue with this probability. I found him very engaging and stuff. But since the question has come up for pretty much everyone else, name a memorable Kennedy match. I mean,
he had a good one with Shawn Michaels.
Oh, really? Yeah. Shit! Shawn Michaels? He managed to get stuff out of Shawn Michaels?
Have you ever heard about the Shawn Michaels fight?
I'm pretty sure he... was he on Velocity?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
If Velocity, yeah.
Not that I want to sound like I'm piling on here, but that's how it's going to come across anyway. But Chase's defense there, I think... If anyone wants to rewind this back and listen, I'm sure at some point I heard him say... We thought he was going to be the guy that had it, was going to be the guy, and events transpired, and it turned out he wasn't. It's a bit like the Nuremberg war trials, and we're saying we were just following orders.
That's 55 minutes, we hit the Nazi record.
We're going to politics.
I'm a history graduate, what do you expect? Yeah. But that to me was how convincing that case was. I'm not saying you didn't believe some of those points there, but the conviction wasn't there for me. And I will say, I don't think he was that good in the ring. I'll pick this one little item out, and I think we've heard it mentioned before. I'm sure I heard it on SNS back in the day. The power slam. The way he would kick his damn legs when someone lifted him up for that damn power slam.
Right? Making it as hard as possible for guys to work with. And that's Shawn hated him for.
So basically, we've said, Shawn Michaels got a good match at him. Well, stone me. Shawn Michaels got a good match at him. Yeah. Jesus H. Christ. Take Kennedy away, right? Take Kennedy away.
I hate you.
Away, right? What's so good about his promos, really? What was so great about his promos outside of saying Kennedy?
No, if you actually go back, I honestly do think that at the time the promos, you know, it was very much the scripted period, which it kind of still is, I suppose. But he was able to bring some, I don't know if they were just good at writing for him, but I remember a few of them, which is more than I can say for most people at that time.
It just seemed different at the time.
Yeah,
so
it's like, because it's like him and Brian Kendrick that I remember cutting interesting promos at the time.
Look, I'm not trying to equate the poor guy to Mason Ryan or Ezekiel Jackson.
Oh,
that'll
fit
me
better not.
Hey, Ezekiel Jackson was on my list. I do have a quick question, though. I didn't really catch much of Anderson's TNA run. Was TNA built around him anyway?
I didn't see it for a short period of time.
How did that work out?
It fucking died.
Not great. It's still there, and it's still not great.
I mean, don't get me wrong. We're not using TNA as our measure.
Obviously, Carl's just picking up on what I kind of said. The way I kind of mean that is that the guy definitely had potential, but it's kind of like, the reason why I said like it proved in the end that it fizzled out was just because, like, due to everything that happened to him, he wasn't able to rebound, and like TNA didn't help him rebound either, and so he never got that chance again to be the top star. So that's what I meant by.
So your argument is more that he could have been, not that he should have been.
Okay. Yeah, I think he could have been. Yeah, because I mean, if I had personally pick, I think there was plenty of other people that I could have picked above him, but I just thought like he was just someone different. That's probably a lot of people might have forgotten, but like at a time period. It looked like he was going to be the top guy. He was going to be one of them.
So do you think, because I think we've all made a case up to this point of saying that we think it can be our guy can be the top guy if given the chance. If he was given the chance, do you think he would have delivered really?
I think he would have, because just like every other top guy in the company, they usually give a, you know, preferential treatment, you know, and so on. And you know, any kind of good top act, you know, all their weaknesses are hidden. So I think any weaknesses he did have, they would have done their damnedest to make sure that they weren't on show and highlight his positives, which were, you know, his mic skills. And I personally thought that he wasn't the most amazing worker in the ring, but he was good enough, I think, to be up in that position.
All right, we're coming to the 1 hour mark. We've hit all of our individual choices, our individual picks. We do have some left to get through from the people who wrote in. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read through the final ones that we have here. We're going to get like one response to the last few. There is a couple here that I do want to get to because I want to read off some of the thoughts. Dustin Rhodes.
No.
Possibly.
Under what? Under Dustin Rhodes or Goldust?
Not under Dustin Rhodes. Absolutely not.
Agreed, but he's a man who can show that with the right gimmick, he can actually take... He can take a weird, crappy gimmick and take it a long way.
But not to the main event.
I'm going to read some thoughts here, because I'm a little bit more lean towards very possibly than no here. This was from LP at Pro Wrestling Only. Dusty Rhodes, in WCW in 1994 and 95 is the second coming, a fighting young babyface a la Ricky Steamboat and Barry Windham.
Very good.
He could wrestle, he could sell, he can brawl his ass off. In the WWF in 1996 as Goldust, he had a chance as well as a heel champ like Ric Flair. The ambiguous, you know, freaky presentation and the glamour and sexiness of Marlena with him is a package. You know, he could play mind games, he could play a chicken shit heel, he could cheat his way to keep the belt, and he could work the freaky, you know, brawling garbage matches too. Another person agreed. Stompers PC. I hate having to read screen names on this thing.
No. His mother gave him that name. Okay. He really shouldn't insult him.
He was so good in WCW from 1992 through his firing to 1995, and was still really young. He was only 26 at the time when he left WCW.
Jeez.
In an alternative universe where Hogan doesn't come to WCW and Dustin doesn't get fired, he almost certainly ends up with a title run at some point in 95 or 96 at the latest. At some point, I think they would have went to him as the top guy because he was as over as anyone on the roster and could work.
Oh, Jesus, you could have said about anyone that we've commented about, like, oh, if Hogan wasn't there, he would have been the top guy. Yeah, you could have said that with anybody.
That is one hell of an assumption to make.
Yeah.
But still, the guy can work. The guy has interesting charisma and can make gimmicks work. I mean, if they've turned... I don't think the Goldust gimmick they came up with was anything you could build anything around as a top level. But I think if you tweaked it a little, made it a little bit darker at the time, I think there's potential there. It's kind of awkward that you've got Taker doing the he's the dark guy with mind games, because I think that's something that... Rhodes could have done very well.
Yeah, I think Dustin's a weird one, just because there was a point in like 90. Yeah, Dustin's just a weird one to rate, because at the time it seemed like everybody thought that Dustin Rhodes was overrated in WCW because he was, you know, the son of the Dream. But when you look back, I mean, he was so good and he had so many really good matches that it almost seems in retrospect that he's actually underrated a little bit.
Oh yeah, he certainly doesn't deserve the sort of the Eric Watch treatment.
No, not at all.
That some. I think it's probably a lot to do with jealousy. People would throw it his way because, oh, he's getting my push. I'd get that if I was Dusty Rhodes' son.
That's probably true. Yeah.
The circumstances, the way they came about, is probably true. But I think it's fair to say that Dustin delivered.
I think it's probably fair to say from all these names that we've kind of read out and talked about today that it's quite obvious that there's been a lot of missed opportunities by promoters. There's a lot of talent that didn't get the opportunity that they deserve.
And there's a few more we're going to get to, because we've got some. We're going to try and speed through some of these. Jay Von Kramer, to mention, agreed that Dustin, you know, wasn't going to be a top guy almost because of his look. His look kind of held him back a little bit in that era where people were conditioned to think steroid look equals top guy.
And that's why Goldust worked for him,
because he was covered up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Kurt Hennig, a very obvious candidate.
Yes.
A lot of people, fly on the wall from PWO, mentioned Kurt Hennig. Had he never injured his back, he may have had the kind of career that Brett or Sean ultimately did with Vince.
Yes.
If it had all worked out before egos became involved with Brett and Sean, Kurt could have been the perfect common enemy that they exchanged lengthy title runs with.
Yes, yes, yes.
However, here's a question though. I know that the whole he never injured his back, he did have a run as a heel with Hogan and didn't draw all that well. It was not the most over heel, and even when he was a babyface,
but wasn't that quite early in him coming?
No, he'd been there for a while. He'd been there as Kurt Hennig, and then as Mr. Perfect, and he didn't get over at first very well at all.
He'd been there a good couple of years by that point, and I think it goes a little bit back to an earlier point where people wouldn't have necessarily believed that Hennig was a threat to Hogan. I think that it's a shame that that's the case, because Kurt Hennig was absolutely fantastic. Definitely someone I considered for my pick at the time.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, but no, I don't quite see it.
Okay, moving along, here's another one from Dylan Waco, Steve Corino. Bit of an off-colour pick.
Yeah, okay.
I really like Corino. I really, really like Corino. I don't know where time-wise he fits in.
I liked young skinny Corino when he was in ECW.
Well, this is
not so much now.
He actually mentioned that Steve Corino, if he was a hair bigger and he didn't have the scarred forehead, and he could have and probably should have been the top heel in wrestling.
And if he'd have been a hair taller and had blah 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 blah, he wouldn't be Steve Corino.
And if Hogan wasn't champion as well.
And let's be honest, you take away the sort of the scarred forehead and his running ECW, no one's noticing Steve Corino.
I think the Corino's a victim of. A lot of people think that he came along at a good time because ECW was kind of, you know, in its dark days. C.W. Anderson was fighting for the number one contendership and stuff like that. Steve Corino was world champion. I never really liked, to be quite honest. But even saying that, I think that if he'd have come along a little bit earlier and was a territorial heel back in the day, I think he would have been great there. And if he'd have come in a little bit later, perhaps, and not, you know, had the scarred forehead and could be that mo mouth heel, I think that, you know, you could have done. So I don't know if he would have been the ace. I don't know if he would have been the 2000s version of Ric Flair, but he could have been something. He could have been. He could certainly have been more than he was. I don't know about Top Guy. I don't think Top Guy.
The thing is, I don't actually think he's that good in the ring. Not poor, but I don't think he's that good. A very good mouthpiece. He can talk his arse off.
I think there's definitely.
I can't think of many good Steve Carino matches.
I think there's definitely other.
Magnum TA. He's the answer to every other good match question. So it must have been a great match there. Somewhere.
Hey, the match at Hardcore Heaven when Tajiri just beats his ass when he calls him a slanty eyed Jap, and then Tajiri just bloodies him up and just kills him.
That was more Tajiri being awesome. That was glorious.
But yeah. Oh god, you make me think about that blade job. Another
one from Dylan Waco. Rey Mysterio is a good pick.
When do you do it? Because where do you do it? That's the thing. Because you've got to bear in mind, I mean, at the end of the day, it was never going to happen in WWE.
Yeah, and it never will.
Okay, it's just because of Vince.
And it certainly wasn't going to happen in WCW either during that time period with Nash and Hall and
Hogan. But did he have the attributes? Forget circumstances. Do you think that this guy, who was so revolutionary and had this unique charisma... Rey Mysterio was a breakthrough guy in a lot of ways.
He was, but to me, he had his ceiling, and that's not because of his height or anything like that. I don't think he was a great talker.
No, he wasn't a good talker.
He had good charisma, don't get me wrong, but charisma doesn't necessarily mean good talker.
I think his style also had limitations as well. He's a great wrestler, but he wouldn't be able to maintain that for a long career, particularly at the top.
It certainly limits who you can work with as well, sort of the pool of talent you can work with to get those good matches.
Yeah, from Pro Wrestling Only, Shu suggests Sergeant Slaughter. Said, I feel like he could have been more of a top guy. Sure, he had runs as a top guy, but not the top guy. He could work at a promo, work face or heel, and he made people care about him. Do you believe Slaughter could have been...
I think there's a window there, pre-Hogan. You see where I'm going?
On the boot camp match with Iron Sheik. The boot camp match, big deal.
The American flag, all that sort of thing. He had all that sort of thing already. I think there's a window there. Not saying it would have definitely worked, but I'm saying there's a case that could have been made for trying it with Slaughter if
Hogan's not available. I think Slaughter's the guy you go with. I don't think Snuka would have been as good a pick as... Slaughter. That's a mouthful.
Well, no, and you've got prison time to look at with...
We don't know if that happened, Carl.
It kind of shows you how much talent was around during that Hogan era where, you know, if Hogan didn't work out for whatever reason, they certainly had a lot of other choices.
Gary Thompson suggested Barry Windham, who was actually one of my original picks for this thing. Barry Windham is an ace. I love Barry Windham, the most graceful, you know, he's an unbelievable worker. I love Barry Windham's matches. I don't think he's an ace, to be quite honest. The more I thought about it, I mean, he can move, you know, and Gary Thompson mentioned he can move, you know, he's move like a cat. Excellent talent, work face or heel, tag singles. Barry Windham could do anything. I don't think he's the centerpiece.
He's, speaking from a babyface standpoint, he's the babyface that you put into a feud with the heel champion whilst you're getting your actual pick ready.
Yeah,
he's the guy you give that 3 or 4 month
Again,
run to have those great matches.
Classic number two guy, I think. Yeah. Number two babyface is the perfect role for him. You love him, you want to do well, but ultimately there's always somebody who you want to base it around more than Barry Windham.
Like Magnum TA.
Magnum's getting a lot of love on this so far. Pro Wrestling Only's Yo-Yo Rumi suggested Rob Van Dam in 2001, and that's a great pick.
Yeah, he was one I was seriously considering as well. Like, there's a lot of ECW alumni who definitely had the potential, and Rob Van Dam is right up there. I think that 2001 period when he first came into WWF, that guy was hot when he was part of the Alliance, the only part of the Alliance that was, and I think that was definitely the period where they should have done something with him.
You remember when Jeff Hardy was really hot and
he
did put him up there. There's just evidence of Rob is a very similar guy. I feel like, yeah, Rob, my friend Rob. A very similar guy in the sense of you've got to be realistic on the level that you can trust them. Building it around a guy at that level. And also I think eventually with a bit of overexposure like that you'd end up with Cena syndrome.
Think so?
Because he is a person. Well, wow. not the Cena syndrome you're thinking.
Even now, among these kind of the smart wrestling fans, there's a lot of backlash about Rob Van Dam. They don't like his style.
Because
a lot of people don't like
his style. Is extremely repetitive nowadays.
I agree. It's a repetitive style. I think to go back to the Rey Mysterio point, you've got that similar situation where it limits the number of guys you can work with and get good matches out of. He wasn't always great in the ring. He could have some. He could have bad nights. To me, he was a real up and down guy. His peaks were fantastic. The lows could be pretty low. Not a great promo, and I think he benefited a lot in that early invasion angle from not being overexposed, like you said. I'm not going to the point of a Cena backlash, but he was used just the right amount. If you pushed him too much and he was on TV too much, I think that would have got stale a lot quicker.
Right. Side bottom from PWO mentioned Vader in the WWF when he first came in. Could have been, should have been a bigger deal. Even working through his rocky health at the start and his bad shoulder.
Vader definitely should have been the top guy. Whether he should have been the top guy in WWF.
Well, he was the top guy in WCW, so in a way, I guess he was an ace in WCW. Whether he was, I don't know if he was, you rank him as Sting, but he was the world champion for a long time.
To me, he's the guy that beats Michaels instead of Sid.
He's
the guy that beats. That beats Michaels and loses it to Michaels back at the Rumble.
Yeah,
I would have actually given it to him at SummerSlam.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, no one's going to disagree that Vader was misused.
All right, Coffee from Pro Wrestling Only suggests Tio Santana, namely an early mid-WF instead of Bret Hart, and target the Latino demographic. Tio had pretty much everything that I look for in a pro wrestler. He was an incredible babyface. Not that Bret ended up badly or anything, but when they went with him, but Tito did when he got the El Matador gimmick. Great babyface, great face in peril, excellent bumper and seller, great solid offense, good look, decent promo, and I know that Tio Santana was actually on the short list of guys to beat Flair for the belt when Bret took it. So
he was on my short list for a very similar reason, actually, that I think he could have been in a very similar Bret-ish spot in many ways. I think there was potential there, personally.
I can honestly say he wasn't on my short list as a suggestion, and I'm glad he wasn't on my short list as a suggestion.
Really?
You can talk about, it's not so much I'm not a fan, nowhere near as good a worker as Bret, not even close for me. And then you talk about Latino demographic. It's worth remembering. Back at that point, it's still a Northeast company.
Yeah.
I know it's got its global.
You mean back? Well, he's talking early mid '90s. You know, I mean
early mid '90s. Right. Are we thinking there's a massive Latino demographic with the WWF? Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, I don't think there was.
Since none of us are in America and we don't live in California,
we're throwing around the African American stuff. Can we please leave the Mexicans alone?
Okay, another suggestion here from Dolzman at Pro Wrestling Only. Evan Bourne, because he was red hot for a short period of time in 2010, and people were going bonkers for him. He could have been the next Rey Mysterio.
No, they went bonkers for a Shooting Star Press.
Spot Monkey.
And he could have been the next Rey Mysterio, but we've already decided we don't think Rey Mysterio is that level.
No, I don't think he is either. Here's a good one, actually, from Matt. No, actually, no, sorry, I was double crossed here. He's wrong where I am. Okay, Matt D from Pro Wrestling Only says that Brad Armstrong could have been bigger than he ever got. Again, don't think he's an ace. Maybe in a Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I know that was Jim Cornette's.
Yeah.
Underused, don't get me wrong. Certainly not championship material.
I'd have to agree, and he's another one I really do like, but I just don't see.
I like him, but no.
Okay, here's a good one. Pro Wrestling Only CS, Stevie Richards. He was a great comedy character, but he eventually got over as a serious main event level guy in ECW. He did variations of his comedy gimmick in both WCW and WWE, but he showed a completely different side of himself yet again with the RTC gimmick. A very versatile performer overall.
Very versatile, but versatile in a mid-card.
The key phrase there was comedy. Whenever there was a comedic element, he was over. He was only ever a bit part in the feud with Raven. Let's not go overboard here.
What about the RTC? I mean, he was getting a lot of heat.
Is it
top level heat? I mean, you think he could have got top level heat?
Yeah, but was that him or was that the gimmick that got the heat?
But he pulled that off very well.
It doesn't matter if he's got the skills to do it, absolutely
agree with the word versatile. I can't see it myself. I wish I could, because I think he's the kind of guy you could really use at the top. I just don't see a time period.
All right, we've got three more we're going to get to. Darren Morris mentions Davey Boy Smith.
Yes. Right time, right place, honestly.
I don't believe so.
If you can put Warrior up there,
you know what I mean?
Hold on. Business wasn't abysmal to Kevin Nash levels under Warrior, don't get me wrong. But look at Warrior. He didn't draw when you compare it to... It's a bit of apples to oranges comparing it to Hogan. But business noticeably dropped off. Warrior didn't work as the guy.
Yeah.
So I don't think the Davey Boy comparison works. David Boy couldn't get a promo to save his life. Royal Rumble 96.
Watch Royal Rumble 92 where he can't pronounce Royal Albert Hall.
That's a very good point. I mean, as it goes, if you're, you know, yeah, I mean, he's a draw in the UK, obviously, isn't he? And that's your problem.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, he's just not a draw out there. And, you know, he's not going to work well unless you try to remember jeans-based heel British Bulldog.
That's not going to work out for anybody.
The Mean Street Posse as well.
This is a great one. You are going to love this one, Carl. I've been waiting 1 hour and 10 minutes to say this to you, Billy Gunn. Craig Pedley, I love you. I'm sorry, but Billy Gunn, I'm going to lean towards no.
Which one? Is it Mr. Ass or the One?
Great physique, height, great good heel persona as Mr. Ass in 2000. If you'd asked me 14 years ago who will be a champion years to come, I would have said Billy Gunn.
I will just say something to you. I think everything... everything I feel about Kennedy, I feel about Billy Gunn. Because I can...
I think worse.
I don't get you, but it's in the same vein, though. It's a guy who I look at and I go, well, they've tried repeatedly. I'm looking at him, you know, he does this, he does that. I can kind of get it. He has no connection.
I will say it in late 1998, when it was very apparent that they were going to push the guys in DX as individual guys, when they, you know, the Road Dogg doing the hardcore stuff, Billy Gunn chasing the Intercontinental title, that would have been the time when it looked like, you know what, let's see what this guy's got. And that match at the Royal Rumble 99 with Ken Shamrock is absolutely fucking brutal. And that was when I remember when I saw that match, I thought, this guy does not have it.
That really was the drizzling shits. But I think, you know, can you give him that spot on promos? No. Can you give it him on, you know, in-ring ability? No. Billy Gunn has even said himself, him and Road Dogg, it was all smoke and mirrors. They didn't really know how to work. They got by on to the point of charisma, not necessarily translating to good promos. They were charismatic.
No, Road Dogg was.
Yeah, well, okay, all right. He leeched off Road Dogg. Let's not kid ourselves. All right, I'm trying to be kind. He leeched off Road Dogg. He was never a top guy. I don't think he was even really IC material.
No, I don't think it was either.
The guy got lucky through his association with Road Dogg and Triple H needing boys because Shawn Michaels had broken his back.
And let's be honest, this guy did get chance after chance after chance. After failing as a babyface, he was given a chance as a heel, winning the King of the Ring, and died on his ass then as well. So we got a couple more to go through. Actually, I think we've only got one more to go through, and this is something that's going to pop you even more, because Steve Warren suggested Triple H. Now, I know what you're going to say. That he is, obviously, he's been pushed down everybody's throats. He said he had, I think his point is more, he had the look, he can talk, he's good in the ring, amazing at telling a story, he married the boss's daughter. However, despite all of this, despite all the booking, he never really was the guy in his mind, I guess.
Well, yeah, I guess so, in terms of, like, in the vein of Hogan, Rock, and Austin, but isn't he technically already, like, a top guy already?
I think he's been the top guy.
Just because he's been around for so long?
He's been the top. There was a period of time, there's been a few periods of time where Triple H was the guy. He made a better WrestleMania, for Christ's sake, and then...
He's the same as The Undertaker. He's been around for so long that he is just a top guy.
He does have an element, like The Undertaker. Undertaker's a good example. Undertaker, you can think of as a top guy, but when was he a top guy exactly? And it becomes kind of tricky, if you know what I mean. When a guy's been around for that long, at that kind of level... Where are the boundaries?
I hate to say it, but I want to see if Carl agrees. I think this might be a bit of an invalid candidate.
The only thing that's been pushed down throats more than Triple H's push is Triple H's penis down Stephanie's throat. Now, what was that guy's name?
Steve Warren.
Steve Warren. I defy you to go back and watch the tapes from the end of August 1999 through to April of 2000, which may not seem like a long stint in the grand scheme of things, but for the way wrestling was booked then, go back on that and tell me he's not the guy.
Yeah.
He wins the belt, Austin's out of the picture, Rock is, to use Armageddon as an example, Rock and Foley are facing off against the New Age Outlaws. Triple H is in the main event against Vince McMahon.
That match was rotten.
That really was a dog shit. The month before at Survivor Series, The Rock and Big Show, the way it pans out. I know Big Show wins, but let's not kid ourselves. The story there was Vince and Triple H. Triple H was the featured guy up until April. Before that WrestleMania, find me another main event at WrestleMania prior to 16 where the heel goes out with the belt. You won't find one. It doesn't happen. That suggestion is just flat out wrong.
On that encouraging note, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a hell of a podcast, the first edition of Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I want to thank everybody, G. John Chase.
Thank you.
Carl Jones.
Peace.
And of course, Luke Edwards.
Good to be here.
And I want to thank everybody for listening. We're going to have another one coming up very, very shortly, where we're going to take a look at the entire WWE roster, and we're going to put them on the firing line. We're going to decide who needs to go, who sucks, who are we going to push, who are we going to fire. That's coming up next. So stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening.